Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Well, today, Neely Piazza and I are so excited to have some experts with us. David Parker and Dawn Lester, and they have written this amazing book. Neely has the book as well. Niels, you want to show your book? Yeah, we both have this book. And I just want to say it's a very tiny book. It's only about 700 pages. But it's got so much information in here about what really makes you ill. And that is their website as well. So you can just Google that or go over there, what really makes you ill. And, you know, David and Dawn, we've been trying to educate our pet parents for a long time about what we see is contributing to pets' downfall, and that is vaccinations. Now, before we go there, let me ask you a question about your research into these authorities, the WHO, the CDC, the FDA. I mean, come on, David and Dawn, don't you think they know what they're talking about?
Unfortunately, not. That's one of the things that Dawn and I had to get involved with, because, I mean, we're going back now over 15 years when we were first looking at this sort of thing. I mean, we were researching the book for 10 years and we've carried on researching. So we have 15 years at least of research. And so because I'm retired now, but an electrical engineer, and Dawn was an accountant, so we didn't come from the medical establishment. Qualified people, of course, we're professional qualified people, so we knew about how to study, we knew how to do research and pay attention to the details. So we knew that if we were going to go up against the whole of the pharmaceutical and medical establishment, that we had to be very sure on our facts, hence why we took so long researching the book. And no one has been able to refute anything we've said and scientifically disprove anything we've said. And now they've had nearly 15 years to do it and still not been able to. So we feel pretty confident that we're correct. And the book is, as you've seen, it's fully referenced, so people can check it out anyway. But yeah, so we found that doctors, the WHO, the whole establishment, CDC, FDA, NHS in the UK, they're all coming from the same position. Most people in it are well-meaning, doctors are well-meaning, but we had to check into how doctors were trained, and we realised that's where the faults lie. They are not trained to understand the human body. They're not trained to understand what disease is, what illness is, how either animals or humans get ill. That's where it all stemmed from. I mean, for anyone, I mean, as an electrical engineer, if I'd been taught incorrectly at college, I'd have been electrocuting people or blowing them up or something like that. And Dawn would have got all the numbers wrong and companies would go out of business. So and we found basically, I know I'm sort of making light of it, but we had to check and we talked to doctors, including like Dr. Andy Kaufman and the Baileys. We've talked to them. So we know how they were trained and they agree. They were trained incorrectly. Same goes for virologists. And so the whole, I'm sort of wanting to call it a lie, because there are enough people now that know that the whole germ theory and vaccinations are not safe and effective. And germs do not make you ill. It's as simple as that, really. And that book that you've got there, nearly 800 pages, actually shows that conclusively, that, as I say, the short answer is vaccinations are not safe and effective. In fact, they're very harmful. And germs do not make you ill. animals and people get ill for the same reasons. You know, animals are no different. And as you know, we're really pleased that you're sort of at the vanguard of making sure that people don't feed their dogs and cats kibble, which is like feeding processed food to humans. It's not good for you. It will make you ill. And it's the same for animals. You know, they, as you well know, they need to eat what they would normally eat in the wild. I mean, let's face it, dogs are basically wolves, aren't they?
They're wolves. They are.
And you don't see wolves eating kibble, you know. They eat flesh, and that's their natural food. So if you don't give animals their natural food, you're going to make them ill. It's as simple as that. Anyway, I don't steal your fun from that.
Yeah, the question really about authorities is really it's an encroaching system of control. So they put information, well, they call it information. They put stuff out and get people to believe so that they'll follow the instructions. Because, I mean, we're all taught, indoctrinated in the whole idea of, you know, listening to authorities and obeying the authority and your elders and all that kind of stuff. So it's a conditioning. It's a social conditioning. But it is a very slow, insidious process over the course of decades, hundreds of years, of getting people to do what they're told, if you like, using fear for the most part. And that's the main mechanism of control, is using fear. So the whole messaging system is to say, well, if you don't do this, then this might happen, or this will happen. And obviously people love their pets and they don't want anything to happen to them. I mean, same for the children as well, but I mean, we're sort of focusing on pets. So, you know, it's like, if you don't do this, then your pet could die. You know, I mean, that's the extreme, but or your pet could have this, this, and this, or, you know, you could pass it on, or you could catch this. And so it's, you know, you want to look up, well, people look after the pets, they love them. So they just want to protect them, look after them. And that's how they get people to follow these nonsense ideas, because they use fear.
And of course, they mandate, don't they? I mean, mm-hmm. Most countries have mandated for vaccinating your pets against rabies. And, I mean, they were doing the same thing, of course, with the whole nonsense that we've just gone through for the last few years. I don't know whether I can mention these names, because I don't know where you actually... It's okay
fine.
To speak.
Yes,
speak
absolutely.
Openly. Okay. Okay. Well, with the whole COVID nonsense, I'm hoping I'm not surprising anyone. With the whole COVID nonsense, I mean, which is not based on anything scientific, and that can easily be shown, and many other doctors now, including the Baileys and Andy Kaufman, Tom Cowan, as well as us, we've shown that quite conclusively. There's no scientific evidence to prove that that was a real disease, and we'll get to talk about it, because rabies is the same. There is no disease called rabies. It's a fictitious thing dating right back to the time of Louis Pasteur, and we can talk in some detail about the false information that he put forward, which back in the day, and I've got quotes from a number of doctors who were around, they were contemporaries of Pasteur, and were great critics of him. They were looking at what he was doing and realised there was nothing scientific about it at all. It's a complete fallacy and very harmful. So we can look at that. And of course, that's carried on ever since, you know, right up to and including today. There is no one has ever isolated a virus that causes rabies. It's as I say, we'll get onto it. And it's probably interesting to look at some of the quotes from doctors who were contemporary, because now doctors don't speak out. They used to back in the day, in the 1800s, they were quite open and critical, and they weren't censored in the way doctors and all others are censored now, you know, where you try and speak the truth about anything and you're deplatformed or censored in some way, and which is very sad. And that's the only way that they can keep control of this, as Dawn was saying. So they can keep this fear-mongering going, and if they can't make people afraid enough to get them to comply, then they mandate. and make, as we saw through the COVID, you know, they were trying to say it's against the law not to wear a mask. It's against the law to sort of get within 6 feet of someone. It's again, you know, absolute nonsense, absolute nonsense. But a lot of people were so afraid, they complied. And Dawn and I have the same problems now, even though we've been, the world has been experiencing this nonsense of COVID for the last nearly five years, I guess, is it? There's still the majority of people think it's a real thing. And yet there's a growing number of doctors that have come out of the profession because it's unconscionable to them to stay within a profession that is harming people, as well as animals. and so they've had to come out of the profession. But still the majority of people believe these organizations, the WHO, as you say, CDC, FDA, and all of these people, people just think, well, surely these organizations can't all be lying to us. But unfortunately, at the top of the organizations, they are lying because they do know the truth. Lower down in the organizations, people are just rule followers. You know, they just do as they're told. It's as simple as that.
I think it would be, I think it'd be great to talk about Pasteur because so many people don't realize how much of a total lie everything he did was. And I've tried to bring that to light a little bit, but I think it would be useful for people to hear, especially as it relates to rabies vaccine, because everybody says, but it's required by law in my state. And I'm like, dude, it's required by law in every state. You're not special. Get over it. Just don't do it. You know, but they're like, but it's required by law. And I'm like, well, okay, stay off the radar. Yeah. It doesn't mean you have to do it. So, but I don't think people understand that the whole, you know, they can get past the other vaccines and all that, but I have to do rabies. I mean, if my dog gets rabies, he'll die. I'm like, okay, well, there have been like 50 cases of rabies in the last 300 years, really? And you've rabies, quote unquote. So I think it would be really beneficial for people to understand what a big scam that whole thing was based on to begin with.
Well, let me just
go in something, because going back to the WHO, just because this just shows, you know, some background. The WHO, they have lots of fact sheets, and that's one of the things that we include in the book, all the different fact sheets. And the latest one is September 2023. So this is talking about people. But it says they say it causes tens of thousands of deaths, apparently. And the interesting thing is mostly in Asia and Africa, and mostly young children. So this is something, yes, exactly. So, you know, for the WHO to be saying that the biggest problem of rabies is in Asia and Africa, and it mostly affects young children, and that dogs are the main source. I mean, there are a few other animals, but they're saying dogs are the main source. So this is really the background to show where they're putting the emphasis, which is on, it's not on, you know, Europe and America. It's, you know, and so they're creating a whole big scam, or they're perpetuating the scam.
And they also say as well, and I'm again quoting the WHO, and they're saying that it predominantly affects poor and vulnerable populations who live in remote rural locations, and as Dawn said, mostly children. Now that's a big clue, isn't it? You think, well, come on, if this is a disease, why is it only affecting poor people in rural areas? And mostly children. I mean, if it's a viral infection, anyone should be able to get it, because they're claiming that 60,000 people, again, their words, 60,000 people each year die from it. there's no proof for this at all. I mean, yes, of course, as we've said, people get ill and people die of all sorts of things. But as we explain in the book, the reasons why people get ill and die, and none of them, and you can name any disease. I mean, we went right back to studying the Black Death to find out why people died. And it's nothing to do with, in that case, sort of infected rat fleas, which we were all taught at school. But it was quite easy to prove that that's not the case. But these are the fallacies and lies that are perpetuated, you know, and children are taught at school, adults are taught, and the mainstream media put this information out as if it's facts, and people just go along with it. They think, well, it came on the, you know, in the UK, it's the BBC. They're the sort of mouthpiece of the government, but everyone thinks they, well, less and less do people think they tell the truth, because they don't. They just put out what they're told, and people accept it. So let me just read a couple of doctors who were contemporaries with Pasteur as to how effective they thought his so-called science was. Okay. Now, the first one is a Dr. Giessen, and his research revealed that the science of Louis Pasteur was not as meticulous as it is believed to have been. His formulation of the rabies virus vaccine was equally flawed. And then in his book entitled The Blood Poisoners, Lionel Dole describes the nature of Louis Pasteur's experiments, and I quote, "The manner in which Pasteur made rabbits rabid was by boring holes in their skulls and inserting filth into their brains. This was not science, but simply brutal quackery. Nevertheless, it was on the basis of this brutal quackery that Louis Pasteur developed his rabies vaccine." So when we were looking into this and we were looking at polio, we found that exactly the same things boring holes in monkeys' skulls and injecting, as this guy said, filth into, and then when it makes either the monkey ill, die, or paralyze, they go, "Eureka, we've proved that the virus makes them ill." And Louis Pasteur did the same, except he was boring holes in rabbit skulls and injecting filth into them. And it's all based on that. But of course, it's all been, since Louis Pasteur's time, it's all become a very lucrative pharmaceutical business where billions are made, both from selling these things, vaccines and drugs, to humans, and also for making humans do the same to their animals. And it's the same flawed lack of science that is behind all this. And that's why Dawn and I do what we do. Whenever we get the opportunity to get on air with people like your good selves, and hope that members of the public will get to hear it and stop doing it. Because if people just got together and said, we're not doing this anymore, it would soon all fall apart. But to get in the numbers together is more difficult than it ought to be. But we'll keep trying anyway.
Well, and Dawn, you had, you know how fear works, right? So I've heard your story that you were diagnosed with cancer and you were scared into doing some of the traditional things and you did them. However, you didn't continue to do them and you healed. You healed yourself, as we would say. You healed yourself because you had a belief, I think, but maybe it was more than that. But can you speak to the fear? Because you have been in that situation, right? You understand where our pet parents are, right? What makes them move. And I are, you know, we all of our experts, you know, from Dr. Jasek to Neely to myself, we all have these situations where something happens with our dog and we get to sort of prove out what we say, right? We get to live that so that we're better equipped to talk to our pet parents about how to deal with fear. But can you talk to us a little bit about your journey of how you get out of that cycle? How do you get out of that cycle of fear?
That's a difficult question, because when you're trapped in the fear, and unless somebody gives you some information or you have a sort of an intuitive insight, which was the case for me, because I don't know where it came from, but there was something that I kind of knew. It was, I had to make some changes in my life, and it was something, as I say, it was intuitive. And I was making step-by-step changes. I was also seeing what was happening to people around me. Somewhere there was a determination not to kind of fall into that. And then, you know, eventually I realized that if you keep going for these tests and exams, you're still buying into the system. And I just thought, you know, somewhere I got to the point of being confident enough to say, you know, like you were saying, to say, no, I'm going to take this into my own hands. I'm not going to go because I know there's nothing to fear anymore. I've got to make some changes. I made them. I knew I felt different. And so I just knew I was in the right place. But to for somebody who's absolutely trapped in the fear, it's very, very difficult because you know, the point is that they're given the information that something awful could happen unless they do something. And that's the point, that, you know, and they haven't got the self-confidence. And I think that's where that comes from. So when you share your stories of what you've done, and you, and that's the point, really, to share the story, to say, look, you know, it's possible to come out of it and move yourself away from the system, and this is what can happen. And then more and more people who are putting these practices, putting these sort of more natural ways of approaching what's called disease, because it's not even a thing anyway. These are symptoms, and we're not supposed to be stopping them. So that's the really the biggest shift, is to actually say there aren't diseases, there are only symptoms. And when you understand the symptoms, you say, oh, that actually, that's a healing process. That's a natural process of the body, because it's trying to, because the body looks after itself. And that's such a big shift to actually take responsibility. And I think maybe some people may be reluctant to take responsibility because it's so much easier to carry on doing things and then just go to the doctor for a pill, you know, or something for their pets if there's something that goes wrong. So it is a step-by-step process, but the more people that are saying, look, this is what we do, this works, to actually show practical, you know, there's all very well this kind of science, what goes on in the laboratory, and none of that's natural. So if you can show your own example of what happens in the real world, you just forget the laboratory. This is what happened in the real world. And look at my dog now. You saw him, you know, whatever, a month ago, he wasn't well. He's now bounding around. He's fine. You know, that kind of thing. And show people real life examples and say, look, it works, because that's the important thing. What works?
People are convinced that bodies are dumb and need help. And in reality, bodies are brilliant. You just have to get out of the way.
Yeah.
Their way.
Well, and the one thing, you know, that Neely says over and over again is, if your dog has diarrhea or it's vomiting, it's doing it for a reason. And if it wants to come out, let it come out. Stop trying to stuff it back in, right?
Yeah.
And there is a pharmaceutical for everything, right? And so I want to ask you, what's your thought about pharmaceuticals, David and Dawn?
Well, there aren't any good ones. We've challenged people. I mean, as you probably know, without, because it's a big section in the book, I mean, they're all derived from petrochemicals, you know. The pharmaceutical things are all derived from petrochemicals. So it's a big unholy alliance between the chemical industry, the petrochemicals, and the agriculture. It's a whole set of vested interests. But there's nothing good about them. They don't cure anything. And they cannot, the pharmaceutical companies, that is, cannot prove that any of them, I'll challenge them to prove that anything they produce cures anything. Now, they have some great painkillers, if you like morphine, you know, so, but that doesn't cure anything. It just numbs the pain. And when the morphine wears off, the pain is still there, unless you've corrected what was causing it in the first place. So in short, the pharmaceuticals don't cure anything. My recommendation is, this is me personally, because obviously I can't give medical advice, can I? I don't take any, I don't take any pharmaceuticals. Live and eat naturally, in the same way we're talking about for the pets, to give them the natural food that they would eat in the wild, if you like. Same for humans, really. So eat fresh fruit and vegetables, natural good food, not processed in any way, and steer clear of anything artificial and processed, and particularly pharmaceutical products. There is nothing good about any of them, and they will only set up, you know, the best they can do is suppress symptoms, and all mm-hmm. that is doing is stopping the body healing and mm-hmm. and suppressing those symptoms, so that you've now got more toxins in your body than you had to start with, which at some stage have got to come out. And as you say, humans are the same as animals. You know, if they're vomiting or they have diarrhea, it's because the body's trying to do what it does best, get rid of the toxic material. So don't go down to the pharmacy and start taking something that's going to suppress the vomiting or diarrhea. It's exactly the wrong thing to do. But of course, that's what people are encouraged to do. And they just set themselves up for more chronic illnesses further down the line. Same for your animals.
So Don, you and David probably don't go for annual checkups, I would guess.
No. I haven't been anywhere near. No, I haven't been anywhere near for over 20 years.
Well, Don, how do you know that you're not just packed with disease and that you have to do something immediately to fix it?
Surely we have to do blood work to be sure you're functioning properly.
Yes, because we have to go to a doctor to find out if we're healthy, don't we?
Yeah.
Yes. No, I don't take tests. And again, obviously with, you know, sort of what I've been through, some people might say, how dare you kind of, you know, take charge of your own health. I mean, there was a point, and it was a very long time ago, it was soon after I'd kind of taken the steps I'd taken, that somebody said, well, what if it comes back? And I go, there's nothing to come back. You know, I already was so sure at that point. And I think that's where, if it's possible to get enough information, so you come from that confidence and just go, oh, okay, I understand what the body's doing, and I'll just, you know, I'm not scared of these things that can get me, you know, and that's really the point. And it applies to just about everything, but of course with the whole COVID nonsense, they've made people scared of each other. And of course then there's also, and you know, I mean, with animals as well, because they are starting this nonsense of is it bird viruses can spread to cattle or something. You know, they're definitely going for the food production system. So you know, they're trying to make out that, you know, somebody had, you know, a bloodshot eye was something to do with, you know, birds and cows. You know, it is the fear, but unfortunately we know through the nocebo effect that people can actually manifest symptoms just through the fear. And of course, because they were pumping out this nonsense day by day right at the very beginning and telling people what symptoms they may have, that it's actually possible that, you know, percentage of the people were actually manifesting those symptoms literally by reading what they might get, you know, literally because they might get it. And there's, because they sort of sneezed or had a slight tickle in their throat, it's like, oh, what else? And so, you know, unfortunately we can kind of draw ourselves into the fear and then create the symptoms. But it's realizing, I mean, there are a lot of steps to get people to come out, and the first thing is to kind of not need a test to find out if you're well or not, you know.
Right.
I think a test. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think and that's why the most basic thing, when we've got into these discussions with people over the last 4 or 5 years, is to say, look, go back to square one. Has anyone anywhere in the world proved that a germ causes a disease, any disease? Choose one. We've said this. Choose any disease you like and show me where the scientific proof is that either a bacteria, because mostly people only talk about viruses, but of course bacteria get blamed for certain things as well. And nothing anywhere ever in the world up to this day has ever been shown that either bacteria or these so-called viruses, which are not living things, it's just cellular debris, just to be precise, bacteria are living things. And we need them. They're on us and in us. We couldn't even digest our food without the bacteria in our gut. So they're not harmful things. They're essential. Viruses, on the other hand, are not living things. They're just cellular debris that virologists look at under an electron microscope and make all sorts of fancy tales about what it is they're looking at. I won't go into all of the details because probably haven't got time, but it is all in the book. And it's just nonsense. There's no science behind it. And once we can get people to realize that they don't need to be scared of so-called germs, that is not why people get ill. They get ill through misunderstanding how to look after their own body, you know, not feeding it with the right food and drinking contaminated water, because we know that the water that comes out of our taps or faucets, as they call it in America, is not necessarily clean. You know, it's got chlorine in it or fluoride and many other things as well. So it's a slow state of poisoning. And we do talk about this a lot, you know, even chemtrails. You know, I know some people still don't believe. They think that these tracks in the sky that go from horizon to horizon are just condensation. You know, we've talked to pilots and looked at jet engines, so we know that that's not the case. You know, we are being sprayed with things, so it's always surprising. It just shows really how amazing the human body is, that it can cope with this stuff mostly. But sometimes the level of poisoning gets too much and we become ill. Now, the last thing then for people to do, and this goes for their pets as well, is to then start medicating themselves with pharmaceutical products. That's just going to make things worse. You know, the body, only the body, and this goes for animals too, only the body can heal itself. And it knows exactly what to do if you get out of its way. But unfortunately, doctors don't know what makes the body ill, and they don't know how to keep it healthy because they weren't taught these things. And so they get in, they get in the way, whether it's your pets or yourself, they get in the way of letting your body heal itself. And these are the basic things we try to teach people in our book. Really, to answer your question, about how to get out of this syndrome that people are in of fear is education. You know, we and doctors many years ago were miseducated about what made us ill. We were told it's germs, and our mums and dads took us along to the doctors with all good intentions, thinking that, you know, if we get a vaccination, it's going to create immunity against whatever germ it is. Well, we looked into vaccinations, we looked into the so-called immune system of the body, and I'll say quite openly, the body does not have an immune system, and neither do our pets. They have a repair and maintenance system, which is not the same thing at all, and it's very good at repairing and maintaining itself. But of course, the pharmaceutical companies need us to believe in an immune system, that they can inject you with something that will then boost your immune system, your dog or your cat or you, so that in sometime in the future, when it's attacked by one of these mythological germs, the antibodies that your body is supposed to have produced will kill the germs off and you'll be okay. Absolute myth. There is no science behind any of that. No one has ever, as I said, have ever proved that germs make you ill. No one has ever proved that the body produces antibodies against once it's been injected with a vaccine of any sort. They are only harmful things. And we talk about some of the ingredients in some of these vaccinations, you know, even mercury and formaldehyde and some dreadful things. And you think, well, it's no wonder people get ill after being vaccinated and sometimes die, as we know, with the whole COVID thing. You know, there's various reports, the VAERS system in the States and the yellow card system in the United Kingdom, which all show, these are official figures, government figures, and they show that thousands of people have died as a direct result of the COVID vaccine. And yet they are still promoting it, that people should take it. Absolutely, it's criminal. I'll use the word. It is absolute criminal, because it's not that many years ago, well, before COVID, you know, if any drug vaccination was shown to have killed even two or three people, it would have been immediately taken off the market. It's been shown that all the various vaccines, COVID vaccines, have killed tens of thousands of people worldwide, and yet they're still promoting it. Now, if that is not criminal, I don't know what is.
And you know that's a low number.
Yes. That's just the official figures.
Just the official number, so you know it's,
It's way more. I think they've just withdrawn the AstraZeneca one, I believe.
I heard that too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they have.
Yeah.
You know, it's... go ahead, Don.
No, that's fine.
I think what you guys experience, as well as Neely and I, we bang our heads against the wall many times because, you know, pet parents get focused on the wrong thing. For instance, I recently had a pet parent who wanted to know if all the cattle had been slaughtered prior to the bird flu. Because if not, then this report that came out that these cats had drank the raw milk from a cow and then all the cats died, that indicated that there was the bird flu in there, and therefore she wanted to bring back all of the beef that she had. Okay, so sometimes you just have to allow that because you're not going to get through to them.
Yeah.
But there's no talking
to people like that.
Right. But here's the thing. I mean, her animals are sick because they're, 10 years old, German Shepherds, vaccinations every single year, flea and tick, heartworm. But let's not feed them real food because it might have the bird flu in it, because there was one little report from the CDC that had no real documentation behind it. But you can send out one report that tick-borne diseases, and I just saw this, are prevalent in this area. Respiratory issues in dogs are prevalent in this area. That one report, without any documentation, will send our pet parents running to the vet to put these toxins in their dogs. And yet, they believe that if the raw dog food, okay, meat, bones, organ, and fat, has thawed just a tiny bit, that there's possible bacteria that's jumped in there, germs that have jumped in there. And the vets love this as well. You know, they push it as well. And this is what's making their dog sick. And Neely and I are like, did you just pump a buttload, a sphincter load of toxins into your animal? And now you're questioning, if it's the bird flu?
You ask no questions about the flea and tick medication that is proven, shown over and over and over and over and over and over and over again to cause seizures and neurological issues and fly biting, all this kind of stuff, without question, without batting an eye. And yet you have a problem with real food? Really? Where's your brain?
It's the conditioning. It is absolutely conditioning.
It's awful. It's like,
I was just going to say, way back again, it's in our book in the rabies section, where, you know, the contemporaries of Pasteur were saying about the lies of Louis Pasteur. And there's a Dr. Woods who was, he'd written, he was a contemporary of Pasteur. And he was suggesting alternative causes for the symptoms that are labelled rabies. And he said, in animals, so-called rabies is fundamentally due to maltreatment or malnutrition or both. So that's way back when, and they're saying that there are alternative explanations for what's called rabies. And again, this is where people need the education, as David was saying, to realise that there are reasons for animals to have these symptoms. And again, I mean, malnutrition, maltreatment. The maltreatment includes being vaccinated, being poisoned by all these so-called medicines, but people won't look at the medicines. And they just are so indoctrinated. We are all, well, some of us no longer, but, you know, basically they try to indoctrinate us into the, germs are bad, got to wash your hands. Well, it's, and it is the germs, but they will find bacteria on rotting meat or sort of decaying meat, but I mean that's the natural place for bacteria to be because they break down, you know, dead and dying. So I mean, if it's actually the bacteria there, chances are it's already it's possibly not as fresh as it might be.
So well, they don't even know that because the vets will say, "Oh, it must be the raw food. It's salmonellosis." And so I always say this. Could you get from your vet the actual strain of salmonella? As we know, there are many, many, many. And would you get the benchmark of the load that it would take to cause this? And can we actually, you know, and this is what the FDA does. They will march into the raw dog food facilities. They will do a swab. It does not indicate whether that is supposedly pathogenic, if that's a thing, right? A bad bacteria, right? There's no bad or good, but it's a pass or fail. And then they cause a recall, right? Which what we've seen in the kibble industry is that there's a miscalculation in vitamin D or some type of synthetic that is really causing an issue with the dog or different kind of chemicals that are in there, mycotoxins, aflatoxins, things like that. But, you know, we don't see that in the raw dog food industry, but they have made that narrative. And there's a lawsuit right now against it's a class action lawsuit being brought against Hill's for their deceptive marketing, where they had two vets at Tufts University. And they're this Dr. Lisa Freeman, and we see that she's involved in two things now, where she sent out a paper that went out to all of the vet clinics that said, you know, here's the research that shows that the bacteria in raw dog food is very dangerous. Now, what she meant was it's dangerous towards people. It was never towards pets. But they switched that and made it, oh, it's very dangerous for pets and you and your family. And then she also came out with another one that said that dilated cardiomyopathy in dogs was being caused because they weren't eating grains. So all of this was just a big scam. But we saw in all of the dog food companies that weren't in the family of Hill's were compromised in sales due to this false claim. So again, it's just you can say something with no factual information, no real scientific research, and people just go running. I mean, we saw it in COVID. I had a woman who literally was going to punch me in the face because I didn't have a mask on. I mean, the insanity, the dangers that come from these false narratives is it's really frightening, I think.
It is. Also, it's a lack of ability for the general public to actually think and to ask questions. Mm-hmm. And again, that's something else we're indoctrinated. They don't ask questions. These people are authorities, and that's all part of the conditioning. They're authorities. You can't question them, because that's a really important point you made, Didi, where the report comes out and people should be saying, well, can we see the study behind that? Can we see the evidence? You know, and this is what people should, I would like to see more and more people starting to do this, to say, well, please show us the study. Please show us the evidence. Please explain what this is based on. Give us some more information and I will then make an informed decision according to the information I get, you know.
That's why, if people really thought about it, why there's no open debates, never been any open debates between, let's say, Dr. Andy Kaufman and Dr. Tom Cowan and Drs. Sam and Mark Bailey, and a virologist of any, you know, they've wanted to, they've asked, they will never do a public debate. And that's because they know they're going to lose, you know, the pharmaceutical companies, that is. And so that's where all this censorship comes from. And so they keep the information away from the public, and so that people like yourselves and ourselves, it makes it so much more difficult to get the truth out there, because people are not seeing both sides of any discussion. So it's very hard. I did want to, because Dawn mentioned, it's just worth mentioning this, because Dawn mentioned Dr. Matthew Woods, and he's another contemporary of Pasteur. And he was also a leading member of the Philadelphia Medical Society, and he wrote much on the subject of rabies. And he states, at the Philadelphia Dog Pound, where on average more than 6,000 vagrant dogs are taken annually, and where the catchers and keepers are frequently bitten while handling them, not one case of hydrophobia, rabies, has occurred during its entire history of 25 years, in which time 150,000 dogs have been handled. Now, you know, 150,000 dogs over 25 years, not one case of rabies from people being bitten on a regular basis. It's
and these are stray nonsense. Dogs. These are not even cared for dogs. These are stray dogs. So there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can go on and on. I mean, we do write quite a bit about it in the book, but it's trying to get this information across to people because it has far-reaching implications, because the authorities try to tell us all the time that there's what they call zoonotic diseases the rise. Okay, so this is diseases that can be passed from animals to humans, okay? So this is their fear-mongering. Let's not only make you afraid of your grandma or your children as disease carriers, let's make you afraid of your pets as well. And this is just awful, but this is what they're doing. You know, there is no transfer of diseases between anybody, whether it's animals, humans, you know, there just isn't. And no one has ever proved that in the entire history of the medical establishment. And Dawn and I went back over 100 years through the research material, and no one has ever been able to prove contagion, infection of anything. There's always a much more plausible and scientific reason as to why people get ill and why animals get ill. And it's never anything to do with a germ, ever. No one has ever proved it.
You know, I was listening to Rona. Oh my gosh, what is his name?
Rogan.
Thank you. I was listening to Rogan the other day, and there was a guy on there, and I wish I had his name, but I felt like he was a plant because he was saying that they're watching zoonotic issues if this bird flu, this is what this guy was saying. If this bird flu gets into pigs, because pigs are so much like humans, then we're all in a bunch of trouble. And I thought, what is going on here? I couldn't believe that the guy was on there talking about mushrooms, right? And he was talking about how mushrooms could really help if you've had the vaccine. That was sort of his whole gig. But when he said that, I just was like, did somebody put him in there so that this narrative could continue as we see this bird flu is, you know, something that they're really kind of concentrating on? We do know that they're trying to take the dairy out and they're trying to take the cows out. But what do you think about that when somebody says, if it jumps in a pig, we're all in trouble?
Yeah. Well again, there's no scientific evidence for any of this transfer of diseases. There just isn't. I mean, we had back in the day what was called mad cow disease in the UK, and literally hundreds of thousands of cattle, you know, farmers lost their livelihoods because all their cattle were destroyed by the government because they were supposedly had mad cow disease. Now, we investigated, and we do talk about this in the book, we investigated what it actually was, and it's nothing to do with a germ. The cattle weren't catching something. They're actually being poisoned because the British government were insisting that in the UK, all cattle had to go through a cattle dip, and the chemicals that were washed over the cows were soaking into the skin and breaking down their nervous system. So the cattle were then losing control of their limbs, hence it made them look like they were going mad, and the government then had them all destroyed. But they were being poisoned. It's pure
same
and simple.
As the spot on flea and tick stuff does the same thing.
Yeah. But most of the general public don't get to know these facts. I mean, we've written about it and others have written about it, but that's a prime example of how animals get poisoned and then the government, and they did in this case, cover it all up because they didn't come out and be honest about it and say, well, not only was it this organochlorine that they were washing the cattle down with, but why it was so prevalent in the UK, very few cases elsewhere, is because the government in the UK insisted on something like three times the strength of the organochlorine to wash the cows down.
It was organophosphate.
Yes, quite a bit since I've read our book.
Yeah, it's called Phosmet. So I think, yeah.
But that's the reason.
But why were they doing it in the first place, you guys? I mean,
it was supposed to protect the cows against warble fly, little fly that can bore a hole in the hide of the cow.
Yeah.
And so the hide is they're not worth as much on the commercial market. So it's all about money. And so the government were insisting that if you wash the hide down with this kind of phosphate, it will kill the flies and they won't do it. But they kill the cows instead. if it wasn't so sad but that's just one isolated case. I mean, but they're doing it all the time. I mean, with cattle, having them inoculated against TB, tuberculosis, cows, and lots of cows, particularly in the UK, get destroyed because some vet comes around and said, oh, your cows showing signs of tuberculosis. I mean, and we have in the UK the ridiculous thing where they told us that badgers, those beautiful creatures, were responsible for transmitting tuberculosis to cows. Now, no proof of this whatsoever, but then the government instigates a culling of these beautiful creatures, and thousands and thousands and thousands of badgers have been killed. Has it made any difference? Not at all. Apart from thousands of badgers have been killed. Now, they would think logically that a badger would be the thing that's transmitting it to cows rather than dogs or cats or humans or squirrels. You know, why badgers? Again, no evidence provided, but this just shows the extreme nonsense that governments do and the tragic consequences of their ill-informed rules that they make. And it's a real tragedy. And, of course, they've been doing it to people now through the whole of COVID, is let's inject people. And thousands of people have been dying or seriously maimed through these vaccinations. They treat us in the same way. And it's a real tragedy and criminal. And we have to keep speaking out so it stops. It has to stop.
What were you going to say, Dawn?
Just to add to the badger and TB and all of that stuff was that there were a lot of people who were up in arms about the badger culling. So the alternative solution, of course, was to vaccinate the badgers to introduce these kind of vaccination programs. Yeah, exactly. So there are a lot of people who go, no, stop the cull, but we've got to vaccinate. And it's crazy. But of course, that's the problem where people think the vaccination is useful in any way, shape or form. And it's such a big step for people to get away from the idea that, you know, there are these horrible diseases that spread around. And of course, this emphasis on zoonotic diseases is going to only ramp up because they want the people to have a different view. Well, there are a few different parts of the agenda, but one of them is to get people afraid of wildlife. And mm-hmm. so that we then move off the land and into the cities. And of course, that's not a good idea, of course, putting it mildly. It's the opposite of what we should be doing, which is to actually get on the land and grow food and that sort of thing. So it's really a multi-layered agenda And of course, one of it, as I say, to spread the idea, if you'll pardon the pun, spread the idea that these diseases spread and wildlife are not just, you know, dangerous, but, you know, we could catch diseases and your animals can catch diseases from the, you know, your pets can catch diseases from these wildlife and these things can spread. So it's just keeping the idea of transmission. And I think you're right. That's whether he was a plant, I've no idea. But that idea that, you know, something can then transmit to pigs, it's just getting people into more and more fear.
Yeah.
And of course, then they'll take whatever actions are sort of the recommendations, and they'll stay away. And it's just the march of the agenda. And so that's why it's important to say, you know, these diseases aren't transmissible. There's no, or rather just kind of, okay, well, if you think they are, find the evidence, you won't. And to get people to start thinking and questioning. And I believe from my experience, more and more people are, and more and more people are determined to not comply with all this nonsense because they can see it for what it is. So it's, you know, we're gaining in strength. And I know sometimes it can feel difficult when you have try and have conversations with people who are just so bought into the fear and the agenda that it's difficult to then, where do you start? Like you were saying with that example, Judy, kind of where do you start with somebody like that? And maybe that's not the first person you try and talk to try and find people with an open mind. And there are more and more. And because we've got so ridiculous,
we can only
now seeing it.
We can only keep putting information, making information, like through programs of yours, your podcast, keep putting it out there. And it's education. It's really just to educate, put the information in front of the people. Yes, yeah, some people will pick it up and run with it, and others won't. You can't change everyone's mind. But as Dawn has just said, we know we've been doing this quite a few years now, and we know that the tide is turning. You know, and more people, we know just from the sales of our book, was done very well around the world. It's translated in 4 different languages, including Japanese. So it's out there, and we're not the only ones. And, you know, like yourselves, you're coming in through animals, you know, animals and humans. It's all the same thing. You know, we're made ill by the same ways. We can stay healthy the same ways. We're no different, really. And it's just unfortunate that animals don't have any say in this. And, you know, they can't tell their owners, look, I don't want that vaccination. It's filth and it's just going to make me ill. Fortunately, animals can't do that. More's the pity. But so we have to do it for them. And we do our best, you know. I just like to read, because this really sums it up for me. This is another doctor. Again, Dr. Morden, and Dr. Morden provides a summary of the mistaken ideas about the existence of an infectious disease called rabies. They ask, is rabies then a disease? Have we isolated a virus or germ? Is the Pasteur treatment specific? Is rabies, in short, fact or fancy? I believe it is fancy, or I have handled so-called rabid animals and humans without benefit of Pasteur treatment, and in no case has there been a death or any other symptoms of rabies. I submit that rabies is non-existent, and that the Pasteur treatment for rabies is worse than the disease, if it were a disease, which it isn't. So, and that's a doctor saying that, having worked in it, with it, for years. Now, if we can get that sort of information, I mean, that is in our book, incidentally, but if we can get that information in front of people and say, look, this is not just us saying it, this is a number of doctors. These were contemporaries of Pasteur's and people ever since, people who were speaking out, and now they're muzzled and not allowed to because of censorship. But the information is there to show that the whole Pasteur thing is just a filthy, horrible mistake, which has caused countless deaths and misery to people as well as animals, and is continuing to do so. It's a real tragedy and a crime. And yes, it does make me angry, as you can probably tell, but I've tried to contain myself a little bit. But it's just so painful. It's just so painful. And you guys, you're at an even sharper end with animals, so it must be really, really hard for you, guys. And I take my hat off to you to keep doing what you do. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, we love it. And some days we bang our heads on the wall, but that's why this big knot's on my head. But so answer this question, Dawn. If you were me and you had a pet parent that said, but I have to, it is the law, I have to vaccinate my dog with the rabies, how would you respond with that?
I would try and ask questions rather than give answers and say, are you sure? Have you looked into it? Have you found, you know, because I think you might find there are people who are providing a different perspective and say that it's actually not the law. It's not mandatory. However, you know, that's my view. But, you know, I'd suggest you maybe have a look into it, and I can guide you in the right direction if you'd like. And here are some, you know, here's some information for you. Are you aware that, you know, the rabies is not what we have been told? You know, just try and ask questions. And because I think if you just tell people something, then they may resist it for all sorts of different reasons. Mm-hmm. But if you ask them questions and they start thinking for themselves, if they work it out for themselves, then I think that's a much stronger position for them to be in rather than being told. Because again, I mean, a lot of people do like being told what to do, but if we're telling people from a different perspective, they might not like it because they're still, you know, it's this cognitive dissonance and kind of, so they'll feel uncomfortable. So it's just, I mean, we've all been learning over the last few years how to approach different people, because you can't just say, oh, did you know? Because it just doesn't always work. People don't always want that kind of interaction. So more and more of us are kind of taking this questioning view, because if, you know, again, if people think about it, if they really do think about it, work it out for themselves, or even go and look for themselves and then start finding information, then there's
I think, you know, it is a case of asking questions, and there's no sort of one way for everybody. You know, you've got to approach each person as an individual. But, you know, because like I keep saying, and comparing animals with humans, it's the same thing. You know, I'd want to ask them, well, you know, have you ever looked into whether vaccinations are actually beneficial? Have you looked into whether they actually cause harm? Would you risk giving XYZ vaccine to your child? And if the answer is, well, no, I've heard they're not so good, I'll say, well, really, you know, do you want to risk the health or death of your pet? Because, you know, people think, in some cases, they think more of their pets than their family members, don't they? I've heard many a lady say that she thinks more of a dog than a husband. But I thought, well, I'm not going there. But, you know, would you really want to risk the health of your pet? You know, at least have a look at, I would be asking them, at least have a look at a little bit of information first before you take that step, which could damage your child, stroke pet, dog, cat, whatever. Just please have a look and then make up your mind. I mean, if they're just completely shut off to it, which sometimes is the case, you can do no more. But at least if you get the opportunity, is to try that. But some people are completely closed down, as I'm sure you've found, and you can't afford to let it get to you, because when you're facing it every day, it would destroy you. You know, it would destroy you. Mm-hmm. So you can only do so much, and then it's in the lap of the gods, as it were.
Okay. Right. You know, and I guess the last question I would have for you guys today is this, or statement, and then a question. Many pet parents believe that the pet police, that the vet police, that somebody, if they push back, if they question, is going to come get them. Now, you guys are sitting here today. You've been speaking out for 15 years and you're still alive. So I'm just, you know, I'm just wondering, can you impart kind of any words of wisdom to our pet parents who think, if I say to my vet, and we have some really mean vets, and they will say some terrible things. And, you know, our daughter's a vet as well. But vets will scare the pants off of our pet parents. But would you speak to that just a little bit, Dawn and David, about what has your experience been like? And you've been speaking out. This is no small book, right? It's a large book. It's got Agenda 2030 in here. It's got a lot of stuff in here that could cause, you know, people to not like you. And so what's your experience been like?
Well, I mean, a good question. And we have been asked this in various ways. I can remember, and he was an American broadcaster saying, tongue-in-cheek, he's saying, have you ever felt suicidal? I knew where he was going with it. I said, no, and that's never going to happen. If it does, then there are some other circumstances, because it's not me. But all joking apart, you know, because the first book we ever wrote was about the nature of reality. And so Dawn and I have a different outlook on reality to what most people do. But a lot of it hinges on what Dawn was saying earlier about fear. We're not fearful. And so we don't bring into our reality those sort of scenarios. We're not thinking, oh dear, you know, this book is so challenging to the whole of the medical system, which of course it is, pulls the rug out from under the whole lot. Therefore, they're going to come and get us. We don't think that. We know that it was meant to be. I mean, our book came out, if you're not aware of it, on Christmas 2019. Well, we all know what happened in January 2020, don't we? That's when the whole... So we hadn't planned it, but it was meant to be. Obviously, it was meant to be. And so the whole thing, you know, we went with it. We knew we had something to do and it was necessary, and we were protected, basically, and because we're not fearful. And I think, you know, if we don't, as individuals, make a stand and speak our truth and believe that we are safe in doing so, who else is going to do it? You know, we can't leave it to someone else. We have to speak our truth. We have to be courageous. And as Solzhenitsyn said, you know, to be a courageous person, just don't take part in the lie. That's all we have to do. Don't take part in the lie. You don't even have to speak out. Just don't comply. Don't take part in the lie. And if everyone just did that one thing, it would change overnight. So
I think one of the hardest things is for people to feel that they're on their own when they're taking a stand against something like that. So one of the most important things is for people to connect with other people who feel the same way. And then there's the kind of the safety in numbers. And then they think, oh, it's not just me. And so if more people are not complying. And that was one of the good things of the, you know, the protest. Not that I agree with protests, but it actually showed there were a lot of people who had a different view from what was going on. So it does help, you know, because if you think, well, it's just me, you know, first of all, what can I do? And the answer is a lot, because obviously each person, our actions kind of ripple out. And at the same time, you know, well, there's only me on my own, who's going to believe me? But the more we interconnect with other people, it's not quite safety in numbers, but there's more, if you like, more kind of power in the numbers.
We feed off each other, give each other courage.
Exactly. So if there are a lot of people in the same vet practice who are just saying, no, thank you very much. But if it's just one, they can say, oh, well, you know, go somewhere else. Well, if there's a lot, the vet is in danger of, you know, losing some income, and so that's going to touch them in a very kind of tender place. If you say, well, we're not very much, if you want our custom, then please don't do XYZ, you know, we'll whatever it is. So it's but if it's a number of people, it's easier to do that. So I think the thing again is for the information to get out, and also for people to connect with each other who feel the same way.
But without getting too esoteric about it, because without getting into more about the nature of reality, we are all connected as human beings. Everything, and this is including not only human beings but animals, everything, all of life is connected. Okay, so our thoughts, as Dawna's really was alluding to, our thoughts ripple out, and if, like throwing a stone in a pond, and it goes in all directions, and it ripples out, and it affects reality, it affects people. So just by thinking the right things, being strong, being courageous within yourself, and that will affect others around you, even though there's no verbal contact, no physical contact. The more right-thinking people are, that affects everything. And as I say, without going into too much detail, because it'd be a whole new topic of talk, but it's very powerful. So, you know, we affect everything. As individuals, our thoughts and what we believe affect everything. So be strong and think the right thoughts.
And that's the other thing, when you are, when you are speaking out, you will actually attract similar kind of people towards you as well. So you will get that will be part of it.
We would love to have you guys back on to discuss the nature of reality, because David and Dawn, one of the things that Neely and I have seen over years and years and years and lots of dogs and lots of pet parents is this. Those of us that have no issue with germs or bacteria, we don't have picky dogs. We don't have dogs that have issues. We don't have dogs that, you know, are playing their pet parents. We don't have and so Neely and I always say it's because our energy is, there is no fear of the food, right? Ever. And therefore our dogs never pick it up. Now, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but we see a major difference in the home with the pets when you have a pet parent that has no fear of feeding a raw diet versus the ones who are like helicopter pet parents. Oh my gosh, are they going to have an allergy? Oh my gosh, are they going to have an issue? So I don't know. Do you think that those thoughts affect
absolutely? Absolutely. You're, again, without getting too esoteric, because it is the nature of reality. But yeah, your reality, your personal reality, is as a direct result of your thoughts. And so you affect everything within your personal reality, which is your pets. So if you have no fear and you know that your animals are not going to be made ill by eating raw meat, because that's really what's good for them, then that's your reality and yours will be fine. But the fearful person who fears everything, whether it's germs or the police or the government, or then their reality will be contaminated with those fears. Your fears will produce results within your reality. I don't want to go too deep into this, but yes, so your right thinking and lack of fear will directly manifest in your reality. Yeah, definitely.
We have got to have you guys back on to do a whole podcast on that, because
that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's so fun, because, you know, without any, you know, in-depth research, we've just seen it time and time and time again. As you can imagine, we see patterns. We see a lot of things that don't make sense. You know, we'll have, so we definitely have to have you guys back on. But get this book, you guys. It's called What Really Makes You Ill, and I would say What Really Makes You / and Your Pets Ill. Okay, because it's all right here. It's just a small little book. And but you know what's great is that you can just go right here to the front of the book and you can say, well, let me read about rabies. Let me read about, you know, what's in vaccines. Let me read about vaccine damage, you know, viruses, bacteria. It's amazing. It's a great reference book. You can also go to David and Dawn's website, which is What Really Makes You Ill, right?
.com. Yeah,
.com. Yeah. What really makes you ill? And it have this thinker right there. Who is this? Is that Hippocrates? Who is this? Who's this thinker?
That is, that's the sculptor, French sculptor Rodin. And it's his sculpture. I took that photograph, actually, a little tale behind that. That sculptor is in the Vatican in Rome, would you believe? And it's a very famous one. It's worth millions now. And there's been lots of copies of it. But we thought that was very appropriate for the front of our book because we want people to think. And so we put the thinker on the front of the book.
And that could be the biggest challenge is getting folks to think. But thank you so much for joining us today all the way from the UK. I've listened to many of your other podcasts. And of course, I see you, David, in the Bigglesons Academy. And Dawn, you've been interviewed by the Bigglesons as well. And so it's all just it really is amazing when you are looking for answers, people show up. Right. When you're I'm just amazed at that, really, you know, being more conscious about asking for certain answers and people, and they just show up. So we appreciate you guys. We appreciate your courage and your time today. And we really would love for you guys to come back on and talk about the nature of reality. Will you do that?
Yeah. We certainly will. Yeah, we'd love to do that. Thank you for your time and thank you for inviting us on. It's been a real pleasure talking to you both. And we'd love to come back and talk to you again.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Just let us know and we'll set something up.
Okay, we'll do that. All right, everybody, get over to whatreallymakesyouill.com. You can get the book, and Neely and I have got it. You must have it. It's a great one. And get your dog over to rawdogfoodandcompany.com. Get your dog on a species-appropriate diet. Get it off the cakes, chemicals, and the cookies, because that's what it is. And get them on a species-appropriate diet, because at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. And what, Neely?
Friends don't let friends feed kibble.
That's right. We'll see you guys soon, everybody. Bye-bye.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.